Welcome to today's deep dive. I'm so glad you're joining us because today we're talking about a city that honestly everyone thinks they already know,
Oh, totally.
right? Like imagine a massive, a $72 billion corporate machine, but it's completely disguised as a pair of cowboy boots.
That is, yeah, that's the perfect way to put it.
When you hear the word Nashville, you immediately have this picture in your head, right? You're picturing neon lights glowing on Broadway.
Petal taverns.
Yes, petal taverns full of bachelorette parties, country music just pouring out into the street. It's like one of the most highly curated brands in the entire world.
It really is.
But today, we are going to completely shatter that myth.
I love that.
We have our hands on this really fascinating June 2026 urban analysis report. It was put together by the American newspaper and the Tennessee Times.
Yeah, and the data in here is wild.
It is. It shows that the real Nashville isn't just, guitars and honky-tonks. It's this wildly complex healthcare powerhouse. And it's a rapidly shifting Sunbelt metropolis that is facing some really intense foundational growing pains.
It's basically, it's essentially two completely different cities occupying the exact same geography.
Right.
You have the external brand, right?
Right.
Music City, the tourist destination. And then you have this internal economic engine that actually finances the whole operation.
Exactly. And our mission for this deep dive is to decode that hidden growth machine.
Yeah.
We're going to map out the incredible pressure that this specific kind of economic boom puts on housing, on infrastructure, and on the local workforce.
This is a massive squeeze.
It really is. Ultimately, we want to figure out what happens when a city's brand becomes, almost too successful, so successful that it actually threatens the very people who built it.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, the sheer scale of the change is what really catches you off guard when you look at this 2025 data.
For sure.
The wider Nashville metro area has ballooned to nearly 2.2 million people. Yeah. And Davidson County, like the urban core itself, is sitting at around 746,000 residents.
Yeah, it's
It's
huge.
massive.
Huge.
So Nashville has the economic profile, the GDP, and the population of a major heavy-hitting state capital.
Right.
But physically, it's largely operating on the legacy infrastructure of a much older, much smaller southern town.
A town that sprawled out long before anyone thought, hey, maybe we should build a mature regional transit system.
Exactly.
So if you're listening right now and you're living in a booming city yourself, or maybe you're looking to invest in an up-and-coming metro, you're really going to want to pay close attention to
Oh,
this.
absolutely.
This isn't just a story about Nashville. This is like the blueprint of the modern American boomtown.
Yeah.
And seeing how it actually functions behind the scenes will give you a totally new lens on urban growth.
I completely agree.
So to understand those growing pains, we have to look at the engine.
Okay, let's unpack this because I was looking at the economic pillars in the report and the disparity between the industries. It completely caught me off guard. I know, right? Most
Yeah.
people just assume the music industry is the bedrock of the whole thing.
Right.
It's vital to the identity, obviously, but it's not the financial anchor.
Not even close. I mean, the tourism industry brings in a record $11.2 billion, and that's based on the 2024
Which
numbers.
is huge.
Huge. And then the music and entertainment industry sits at around a $15.6 billion economic impact, both massive numbers.
But then you look at healthcare.
Yes. Healthcare is sitting at an astronomical $72.1 billion in annual economic impact.
It's just staggering.
It supports over 370,000 jobs. That's an entirely different stratosphere of wealth
It
creation.
really is.
Right.
And that is what transforms Nashville from just a regional hospital hub into a national corporate health center.
Right.
The key to understanding this is the multiplier effect of the healthcare ecosystem. Think of it like a massive coral reef.
Okay, a coral reef. I like that.
Yeah, so you have this giant anchor institution like HCA Healthcare, which was founded there. HCA is like the limestone base of the reef. By itself, it's just a hospital management company. But its sheer physical and financial mass creates an environment where secondary organisms have to attach and grow.
Oh, wow. So what are the secondary organisms in this case?
Well, a giant healthcare corporation requires specialized corporate law firms to handle, medical compliance.
Oh, of course.
Right. They need healthcare IT companies to manage patient data. They need medical real estate developers to build clinics.
And private equity firms to fund acquisitions.
Exactly.
So the hospital pulls in the tech companies pull in the specialized lawyers.
Yep.
And suddenly you have I mean, millions of square feet of class A office space filled with these six-figure salaries.
Valleys that have absolutely nothing to do with writing country songs.
Right. So, I mean, the music and tourism brand is really like the flashy lead singer getting all the
Oh,
attention.
that's a great analogy.
But healthcare, state government, higher education, they're the rhythm section actually paying the bills and keeping the tempo.
And unlike tourism, that coral reef of professional services is highly insulated from economic downturns.
Oh, that makes sense.
Okay.
Because leisure travel is discretionary.
Exactly. If there's a recession, people cancel their trips to Broadway. But the demand for medical administration, regulatory consulting, that stuff is constant.
It's recession-proof.
Yeah, that is the actual bedrock stabilizing the local economy.
What I found super fascinating, though, is that this knowledge-based economy isn't some new, tech bro invasion.
Not at all.
The report digs into the city's history, and it points out that long before it was marketed globally as Music City, Nashville was known as the Athens of the South.
Yes. The university infrastructure is
It
massive.
is. Vanderbilt University generates a $22.1 billion impact all on its own.
Which is wild.
And you have Belmont University, and critically, you have these deeply rooted, historically black colleges and universities.
Right. Fisk University, Meharry Medical College, Tennessee State University.
Exactly. These institutions were forming a highly educated professional class and serving as a crucible for the civil rights movement over a century ago.
And that historical intellectual infrastructure is precisely why modern corporations are relocating there today.
Right, they aren't just showing up for the tax breaks.
No. When Amazon sets up an operations center of excellence, or AllianceBernstein moves its headquarters, or Oracle plans that massive new campus on the East Bank, they aren't coming just for the favorable tax environment.
They want the talent.
They are targeting that exact pre-existing pipeline of highly educated professionals coming out of those legacy universities.
But if this engine is running so hot, who is actually capturing all this wealth?
Yeah.
Because when you drop an Oracle or an Amazon into a city, you physically rearrange the geography of who gets to live where.
You trigger a massive spatial shuffle. And what's fascinating here is how the demographic data from the report overlays with the economic data. It's really revealing.
Wait, what were the demographic percentages again?
So the growth in Davidson County is highly multi-ethnic. It's roughly 15% foreign-born, 14.4% Hispanic or Latino, and about 25.9% Black.
Okay, so it's a very diverse city.
Very. But while the population diversifies, the labor market is aggressively bifurcating.
Bifurcating. So it's splitting into two extremes.
Exactly. The middle is completely hollowing out.
I want to break down how that split actually functions on the ground. On one end, you have the high-wage tech, legal, and medical professionals we just talked about.
Right.
On the other end, you have the lower-wage workers, the hospitality, food service, construction, informal labor.
The people actually making the city function.
Exactly. The people building the high-rises and flipping the hotel rooms. How does that massive gap drive gentrification?
Well, gentrification is ultimately a mechanism of displacement, and it's driven entirely by land value.
Okay.
As those high-wage professionals pour into the city, they obviously want to live near the urban core, so they start buying into traditionally working-class neighborhoods.
Places like East, Nashville, Germantown, and the Nations.
Suddenly, you have this explosion of high-end restaurants and, renovated historic homes. But this creates immense structural pressure on the historic communities that were already there.
The report specifically highlights North Nashville and the Jefferson Street corridor for that,
Yes.
which have this incredible historical significance for Black entrepreneurship.
Absolutely.
But if you own a home there and you've lived there for 30 years, you might think a booming property market is a good thing for your net worth, right?
Right. On paper, yes. But in reality, it often functions as an eviction notice.
Wait, how so?
Let's say you inherit a family home in North Nashville. You're living on a fixed income.
Okay.
Suddenly, a developer buys the two houses next to you, tears them down, and builds tall, luxury, modern builds.
Ah, I see where this is going.
Yeah. The city reassesses your property value based on those new neighbors. Your property taxes triple overnight.
And you simply cannot afford the tax bill on your fixed income.
Exactly. So you're forced to sell to a cash buyer and move out of the county entirely. It's a localized displacement driven by speculative investor demand.
The report also points to immigrant corridors, right? Places like South Nashville, Nolensville Pike, and Antioch.
Yeah, it basically calls them the city's labor engine.
Because they are the workforce keeping the branded city running.
Yep.
But wait, so the people running the hotels, building the new high rises, and keeping the entertainment district alive are essentially being priced out of the very city they are operating?
Yes.
How much of a squeeze are we talking about here? Because they face severe wage volatility, language barriers, weak tenant protections.
It is the defining urban constraint of Nashville right now. The affordability squeeze is just brutal.
Because I'm looking at these median incomes versus housing prices in the report, and the math just flat out does not work.
It doesn't. Look at the Redfin data from May 2026.
Okay.
The median sale price for a home is hovering near $475,000. Average rents are around $2,200 a month.
But the median household income is what, roughly $77,000?
Exactly.
If my household makes 77 grand before taxes, I absolutely cannot afford a $500,000 mortgage without being severely cost burdened.
You'd be totally strapped.
I'm like one medical bill away from ruin. Where are these people supposed to go?
Well, sadly, a lot of them are falling through the cracks entirely.
Yeah.
The most extreme symptom of this math failure is the homelessness crisis. The 2025 count found over 20,180 people experiencing homelessness.
Wow.
Yeah, with about 602 of them entirely unsheltered.
And the report stresses a really crucial point here.
Which is?
A very large share of these individuals have a last permanent address right there in Middle Tennessee.
So they aren't outsiders. They aren't transients hopping on a bus to come to Nashville.
Exactly. This is a localized failure of housing supply, income, and behavioral health capacity.
Traditionally, though, the Sun Belt solution to expensive urban housing was just drive till you qualify.
Right, the sprawl model. You just move 30 miles up to the fringes where the land is cheap, buy a house and commute in. Why isn't that working anymore?
Because it completely ignores the hidden tax of transportation. Nashville grew with a car-oriented, sprawling land use pattern.
Right.
If you move out to the periphery, sure, you might save $500 a month on rent. But you now have to own a vehicle, pay for gas, pay surging auto insurance rates.
And maintain the car.
Exactly. The average cost of car ownership is pushing $10,000 a year now.
So you aren't actually saving money.
No. Plus, you're losing 2 hours a day sitting in severe gridlock on the interstate just to get to your service job downtown.
You haven't solved the affordability crisis. You've just shifted the cost from your rent check to your gas tank and your sanity.
Perfectly said.
And this leads to something really big. In 2024, voters actually approved this Choose How You Move transit program, right?
Yes, it was a huge structural turning point.
They passed a sales tax surcharge to build 24/7 transit, better bus routes, upgraded traffic signals. But here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah, you'd think the answer to an expensive housing market is just, build more houses. Economics 101 says increased supply lowers prices.
You would think so.
The city is throwing up apartment buildings everywhere. Why doesn't a massive wave of market-rate construction eventually fix this? The report says a market-only interpretation is incomplete.
It is incomplete because housing doesn't always filter down fast enough to help the people at the very bottom, especially when population growth outpaces construction.
Okay.
A market rate boom stabilizes prices for the upper middle class, sure, but developers have zero financial incentive to build deeply affordable housing for a hotel housekeeper.
Because the profit margins just aren't there.
Exactly. The materials cost the same, the labor costs the same, but the rent they can collect is drastically lower.
So the private market alone won't solve it.
No.
Huh.
The report argues you need targeted housing interventions, things like permanently affordable units and especially community land trusts. Wait, how does a community land trust actually work mechanically? Like, how is it different from just buying an affordable house?
It's actually a really elegant solution. It separates the cost of the house from the cost of the dirt it sits on.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. A nonprofit organization owns the land itself. You, the buyer, purchase the house sitting on that land at a much lower price, and you just lease the land for a nominal fee.
So I get to build equity in the house.
Yes, you do. But here's the catch. When you decide to sell, the resale price is capped.
Okay, so the land value stays locked out of the speculative market.
Exactly. It ensures that the house remains permanently affordable for the next working class buyer decade after decade, regardless of how much the surrounding neighborhood gentrifies.
Wow, that makes total sense. You basically take the real estate out of the casino.
Exactly. But you have to tie that housing strategy to transit. And that goes back to the 2024 transit tax we talked about.
Right.
The report warns that if they build better bus routes but don't change zoning to allow density along those routes, it's a massive wasted opportunity.
So transit and land use must be legally tied together.
Absolutely. Think about it. If you run a frequent, high-quality bus line down a major corridor, but the zoning only allows for single-family homes on large, grassy lots.
You just have a fantastic bus driving past empty lawns where hardly anyone lives.
Exactly. The city has to legalize what planners call middle housing along those routes. Duplexes, triplexes, small courtyard apartments.
Right, but rezoning a neighborhood for triplexes forces a massive political fight. People get very protective of their single-family zoning.
Oh, incredibly protective.
So if targeted policy is the only way out of this housing and transit mess, we need to look at who actually holds the power to make these choices.
Yeah, you have to follow the money.
Right. How do they pay for it, and what happens if they fail?
Well, Metro Nashville relies incredibly heavily on property taxes. They make up over 56% of the local revenue.
Which creates a severe structural tension.
Right. The city desperately needs rising property values to fund its schools, fix its potholes, and pay its teachers.
But those exact same rising property values are what trigger the displacement we just talked about.
Exactly. So the city is kind of incentivized to cater to what the report calls a development coalition.
Which is who, exactly?
The real estate developers, Vanderbilt, HCA, the Tourism Bureau, and state government actors. They hold the real power.
And their biggest test right now is the massive 550-acre East Bank megaproject.
Yes.
It's anchored by a new stadium. It's practically a blank canvas.
And it is the ultimate test case of value capture. Can the city capture the massive land value gains from this development for the public good?
Like funding transit and affordable housing.
Exactly. Or does it just become a private, walled-off luxury enclave for tech workers?
The report actually compares Nashville to its peers to show its potential futures, which I thought was really smart. Let's look at Austin, Texas.
Austin is the perfect warning of what happens when a powerful brand, a massive tech influx, and a highly desirable lifestyle collide with limited legacy infrastructure. They waited way too long to build high-capacity transit, didn't reform their zoning early enough, and the result is astronomical housing volatility and legendary traffic congestion.
The brand outpaced the blueprint.
Completely.
And what about Atlanta? What's the specific danger there?
Atlanta represents the danger of sprawling into permanent metropolitan segmentation without mature regional transit.
Because the surrounding counties resisted the MARTA rail system, right?
Right, back in the 80s and 90s. The result is a heavily fractured region where incredible wealth concentrates in some areas, while others are completely cut off from economic opportunity.
Because you simply cannot get there without a car on a congested highway.
Exactly.
And finally, they point to Memphis.
Yeah, Memphis is a sobering reminder of what structural disinvestment looks like.
Right.
If a city ignores deep-seated racial inequalities and chronically underfunds its public education system, the growth engine stalls. Companies stop relocating there.
And you cannot talk about inequality and investment without touching on public safety.
No, you can't.
Now, I want to be completely impartial here and just strictly report what the data and the sources states. We aren't taking sides on the politics of this.
Of course.
But the report notes that violent crime in Nashville is actually down. Homicides in 2025 hit their lowest point since 2014.
Yeah, the data is pretty clear on the decline.
But despite the falling numbers, the public safety debate remains heavily polarized. The researchers, though, argue for specific interventions rather than choosing between enforcement and social policy.
Right. They advocate for a mechanism called focused deterrence.
What does that actually look like in practice?
Well, data shows that a very tiny fraction of a city's population usually drives the vast majority of its violent crime.
Okay.
Focused deterrence involves identifying those specific high-risk individuals and bringing them in for a direct intervention. You give them a stark choice. If the violence continues, you will face overwhelming targeted law enforcement.
But simultaneously, you offer an off-ramp?
Exactly. Immediate access to job training, housing assistance, and behavioral health support. You're applying both enforcement and social services surgically to the people who actually need them.
That makes a lot of sense. You can't police your way out of housing crisis, but you also can't provide social services if social workers aren't safe.
Exactly.
But all of this, the transit, the land trusts, the social services, it all costs money.
Yep.
So if I'm a local resident whose property taxes just doubled, I'm looking at Broadway and asking a very simple question.
Which is?
If the city is making record money from 16.9 million tourists, why can't they just use the tourism tax to fix the sidewalks and schools?
This raises an important question, and it's known in urban economics as the capture problem.
The capture problem.
Yeah. It sounds simple, right? Just tax the tourist.
Yeah.
But the tourism industry creates massive external costs that the public is forced to absorb.
Like what?
Well, 17 million visitors create incredible wear and tear on the physical roads, the sewer systems. They require massive amounts of sanitation.
And a heavy downtown police presence just for crowd control.
Exactly. They create noise. And critically, they drive up the cost of housing through the explosion of short-term rentals that eat up residential supply.
Ah, so the tourists are generating profit for the bar owners, but handing the city a massive invoice just to manage the chaos.
That's it. Exactly. The fiscal surplus from tourism must be consciously and aggressively redirected by policy toward the residents.
Toward affordable housing and transit.
Right. Because if it isn't, the city simply socializes the cost of tourism onto the everyday taxpayers while privatizing the financial gains for the hotel operators and developers.
Wow. Socializing the costs and privatizing the gains.
Yeah.
So what does this all mean? If we zoom all the way out, this deep dive maps out a really profound contradiction.
It does.
Nashville has the momentum of a massive global brand. It has the institutional depth of a state capital. It has a $72 billion healthcare engine.
Generating incredible wealth.
But it's facing a structural crisis where its workforce is physically excluded from the city's success.
And that leads to a final thought from the report that I think is truly provocative. It's something to really mull over.
Okay, let's hear it.
Nashville's brand relies heavily on being Music City, right?
Hmm?
It relies on the authenticity of its deep cultural labor, the songwriters, the sound engineers, the artists, the service workers.
Right.
But if the city becomes so commodified for visitors and so expensive for residents that those artists and workers can literally no longer afford to live there.
Does the brand eventually consume the very culture that made it valuable in the first place?
Exactly.
Does the brand consume the culture? I mean, if you price out the musicians, is it still Music City? Or is it just a theme park disguised as a city?
It's a heavy question.
It really is. We encourage you to take a look at your own city's growth machine today. Look past the skyline. Figure out who is actually building it, who is paying for the infrastructure, and who is being pushed to the edges. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive, and we'll catch you on the next one.